when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio friends and family, thank you for hanging on. We're in the second hour now. We have the one and only Ernst Zundel, the world's foremost, if not the only, expert on gas chambers and gas execution of humans in the world. It's recognized as such by three nations, by Canada, the United States, and some states in Germany. We also have his friend, his lawyer, and I think his future fiancé, a California attorney by the name of Miss Mona Montgomery. We'll be bringing her on as soon as we can. Just to give you a brief synopsis, a brief summary of what we're talking about. In around 2005, 2007, I believe it was, we have a Canadian citizen by the name of Ernst Zundel, who was brought in and prosecuted by the Canadian government for inciting hatred, of racial hatred, for Holocaust denial. He was prosecuted. He was eventually, he fled to Tennessee, I think in Mount Eagle, Tennessee, and he was captured there and extradited to Germany. I believe that's where he died. I'm not sure Fred will know more about that. But anyway, Fred came in, just in case you're tuning in, he was handpicked by the now deceased, rest his soul, Robert Faurisson, a great Frenchman. He was the historical revisionist expert on the so-called Holocaust. From Robert Faurisson, at one time, was a believer in the Holocaust. He was an intellectual. I believe he was a professor of history. I can't swear to that. But he, through great, infinite, meticulous research, he found out that the so-called Holocaust was a hoax. It never existed. And when he came to the attention of Ernst Zundel going on trial in Canada for his life, pretty much, for Holocaust denial, for a hate speech, for an incitement of hate, well, Robert Faurisson recommended to the defense team, Ernst Zundel's defense team, that they should get the world's foremost expert on gas chambers and gas chamber execution of humans and send him on a fact-finding tour to Europe, to the so-called death camps of Auschwitz and Dachau. And there's another one there that Fred mentioned, but that's where we are. So that's how Fred got involved. And one thing that I'm very proud of, I'll make this kind of an aside, I have a copy of the Lutcher report signed by Fred. It's in my safe, and I'm really proud of that. I can't understand a lot of it in engineering lingo, but Fred, he submitted his report to the Canadian government. They would not read it, but what they did, they screwed up, and they had him to testify. Now, that's another, I'm just expanding upon the biography and how Fred Leutcher got involved in this trial, Ernst Zundel's hate trial in Canada. Now, Fred, if you will, tell us about your trip, what you put together, a team. Tell us about the team you put together, and you took it to Europe. Tell us about that and the places you went to Europe, and tell us about the incredible lengths that you went to. I know about them. You used drills and chemical samples and all the stuff you did, and we don't want to forget how you sent these chemicals to these samples that you took from the walls and the soil, in the ceilings, in the roof, in the basement of all these so-called death camps, and you brought those samples back to the United States and sent them to an independent lab. So if you will, Fred, tell us about, start off, the team you put together, and tell us about the journey you went to Europe. So go ahead, Fred, if you don't mind. Take off there.
Okay. Well, I mean, essentially, when I went, I took my draftsman with me, Howard Miller, who's now deceased, and that was Howard's second return. That was second time he was in Europe. The last time he was there, he was on the back of a pickup truck with an anti-aircraft gun. He was there during World War II. But anyway, we went just after the Iron Curtain came down, and nobody was really looking, nobody was really thinking about what we were doing, and we got there. We went to Auschwitz, and then we went to Birkenau and Majdanek, those three camps comprised the Leuchter Report. So at any rate, at Auschwitz, the main gas chamber, or the alleged gas chamber, if you will, at Auschwitz, we took samples and we measured the rooms of all the facilities we were at. We drew diagrams of them. We marked the locations that we took samples. And if you went there today with a copy of my report and you went around the room with a ruler, you would find the spots where I chiseled the wall or the floor, and I removed the samples that were sent to the laboratory. We did that in Auschwitz I. When we went to Birkenau was a little more difficult to deal with. There were four alleged gas chambers there. They were involved in. Two of them were in two buildings called Crema 2 and Crema 3, and then two of them in Crema 4 and Crema 5. The Crema 2 and Crema 3 they had morgues. They had escalators for bringing the bodies upstairs where they were worked on, and then they were taken to into the crematory where they were burned. Those two buildings had been blown up, probably by the Russians. They keep trying to blame the Germans, but the Germans would have had no reason to blow them up. They didn't blow up the alleged main gas chamber at Auschwitz. Why would they blow up two alleged gas chambers at Birkenau? They were all caved in on themselves, and those are the facilities that I had to go down under the caved-in buildings and remove the samples. And the other two, four and five, were two buildings that were red brick buildings that were built on a concrete slab. They had been removed. Nothing was there by the time I got there except the corners of the buildings, and I found out that the bricks that the gas chamber was made of were used by the Poles in building houses after the war. And it's really interesting, a facility that's supposed to have poison hydrogen cyanide gas permeated into the bricks, these people took and they built their houses with them shortly after their use, which actually means that there was nothing dangerous or poison there. The third place that we looked at that time was the delousing facility, which was way away from most of the camp. And at the delousing facility, it was just a large room built out of brick. It had an outhouse on the side of it that contained a stove, and the stove was used to heat the Zyklon B. The Zyklon B pellets, they were either snippets of paper in a disc, or they were pieces of diatomaceous earth, calcium pellets, crushed up seashells. There are the crushed up seashells and diatomaceous earth, that they're all the same thing. They're calcium pellets, and they were also put into a discoid. The stove was made to heat. The stove was lit, and there were any means of lighting it, gas, wood, whatever they wanted to use. They had a blower on it, and the blower blew the hot air through this discoid of Zyklon B, which was a pesticide. And the it sublimated the gas. Sublimation is when the gas that was in the pellets is turned to gaseous form again and is blown into the pipe and then into the room where they were doing the delousing. And all of the clothes would be deloused there, probably for 8 or 10 hours. And after the delousing, they left an evacuating fan on that blew fresh air through the facility for a day, 2, maybe 3 days, depending upon the amount of clothes they had in there, because it was dangerous to go in and take the stuff out. So when they got in there, all of the clothes had been pretty much aired out.
Fred, we got to go to a quick break. Fred, we will go. We'll come right back to that spot. Mark that spot, Fred. Don't forget one of y'all. People, this is very fascinating. Okay. We are destroying the so-called Holocaust. Okay. We'll be right back.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more while listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
This is a battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue. And when the man waves, hey,
back to Fred Leutcher. I was talking to Fred Leutcher. And he had a great number of people over on his team. There were some Polish nationals, some Canadian nationals. And, you know, it was a big group that he carried over there. So anyway, we're going to go right back to Fred without further ado. Fred, tell us a little bit about the group that you took over there. But I don't want you to lose your place. Continue on with the, I'll tell you what, just briefly tell us about the number of people over there. You know, you had draftsmen, you had Canadian nationals, you had Polish nationals helping you out. You had carried all kinds of engineering tools. Tell us a little about that, Fred, but continue on with what you were talking about before we went to the break.
I don't know about engineering tools. What I had was stuff that was rather crude. There may have been engineering tools 100 years before that, but I had a couple of star drills. I had a couple of chisels. I had a hammer. And basically, I mean, I chiseled pieces off the walls and the floor, and I used a star drill to drill holes and take the material from that as well. The interesting thing that happened was that when we went to the third, are we on the air now or not?
Yes, we're on the air. Yes.
Okay. The interesting thing was we went to the third camp, which was on the other side of Poland. It was in Lublin. Remember, we had been Auschwitz-Birkenau. The third camp was Majdanek, which is, as I say, is in the Lublin area and in Poland. And that also allegedly had gas chambers, but my inspection there indicated that they had nothing, and nothing more than they had anyplace else. They had chambers where they deloused clothes, which was done with hydrogen cyanide gas from the Cyclone B. But they also had other means. And toward the end of the war, they didn't have a lot of Zyklon B. The Germans didn't have the money to buy a lot of it. They didn't do the fumigation of the barracks and stuff as much as they should, because we found very little residue of it there. What they did toward the end of the war, and that's when most of these alleged executions in the gas chambers took place, they were actually using steam chambers to delouse the clothing, and that consisted of a chamber with a door with two doors, one on one end and one on the other. They put the clothes in on a coat on coat hangers on a rack. They slid it in. They put steam through the clothes, and then they come out. They opened the door on the other end, and they let them out, and they took the clothes out, and they gave them back to the people who were waiting, because it was much faster. The steam was much more efficient than the Zyklon B. They also had microwave ovens that they nuked the clothes in, and most people don't even realize that. And the Germans, as you know, were very efficient, and they didn't even have to heat up the steam. All they had to do in those facilities were run a microwave tube. It wiped out all of the vermin, the lice and stuff that was on the clothes, so it was much more efficient. And that most of that was done toward the end of the war, which incidentally was the alleged time that most of the gassings took place. So there wasn't enough Zyklon B on the planet to execute anywhere near the number of people that they claim was executed with a Zyklon B. But at any rate, we were at the third location, which was in Lublin. It was Majdanek, and we were in one of the outlying locations. And unbeknownst to us, my ex-wife's son had been killed in an auto accident. He was newly in the military. He was out in Nebraska, and he was killed. Here's where the fun began. Her ex-husband called the State Department and wanted them to reach my party. And he said that I was in Poland studying gas chambers. Okay, that would have been fine. But he told the U.S. government, I told the American embassy, that I was one of America's top chemical warfare experts. They conveyed that information to the U.S. Embassy in Poland on an unsecured telephone line. So when we found out, they sent for me, and I found out, and I had the rather unlucky job, and it wasn't a very nice job. I had to tell my ex-wife that her youngest son had been killed, which I did. But the woman that came from the embassy was one of the under consuls, and she said, I need you to put yourself in my custody, so they can't get you. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, it seems that they announced to the entire world in Poland that I was a top chemical warfare expert for the American government, in which case the Russians were looking for me. The Poles were looking for me. I had a half a dozen police forces looking for me. So at any rate, I was in her custody, so they technically couldn't touch me. And we went back, and they had to do something with us. We pulled into the back of the embassy, and they took my entire party, all of the Canadian nationals, some of them were German nationals that were with us. They took them all into the code room in the back of the embassy, and they said, "Don't tell anybody where we are because this is a secure area. We're not supposed to have anybody in here, but we're doing this because we don't want the Polish police to know where we are." So the following day, they took us to the hotel. We spent one more night there, and then we were put on the airplane to go out. We flew into Frankfurt, and then we flew from Frankfurt to the United States. And when we did this, we were concerned about, when we went through customs, whether or not they were going to find all of the samples that I had. And they wouldn't have been too happy that I was chiseling their foolish shrines, that I was chiseling pieces of the walls off. So what we did is we put all of the samples, and they were all in plastic bags and all sealed. We put them in with our dirty underwear and our dirty socks. And when we got to the customs, they opened the bag with that stuff, and they closed it up. They said, "We don't want to look through that." So all of the samples got out of Poland and got through German customs and got to the United States without being searched. So, and then at that point, we came back to the United States, and I sent the samples out to the laboratory. The laboratory was told that I was investigating an industrial accident case. They didn't know the samples came from Poland. Yes.
You told us during the break. What was the name of the laboratory? It was the independent
Alpha Laboratory. ALPHA. Okay. And they didn't know. They didn't know where the stuff came from. They just thought it was an industrial accident case. I didn't want them to know what was happening. And what finally happened was the head of the laboratory, when he was called to testify in Canada, and when he got to Canada and he found out that it was relative to the gas chambers and the Holocaust, he later told people, and he left Alpha Laboratories, we don't know where he ever went, and I think the poor gentleman was Jewish, so he probably got ostracized by his own people. But he said that I gave them improper instructions for testing it. He said that cyanide only stays on the surface, and if it stays on the surface, he was breaking up big chunks of it, which is foolishness, because everybody knows that in the areas where they had the Cyclone B gas, where they actually did the delousing, the Prussian blue color went right through the walls. It was on the outside as well as the inside. So it migrated right through the wall. So he was lying when he said he was told to test them incorrectly. I told him what he was testing for and what he was supposed to do, and they did a good job. The samples showed that there were no there was no Zyklon B in any of these locations that were allegedly the gas chambers. And one of the things that many people don't realize when they read my report is that the samples that I took were actually only the icing on the cake. What I was primarily sent there for was to look at the facilities and make a determination of whether or not any of these alleged gas chambers could have actually been used as gas chambers. And, of course, they didn't lend themselves to be used as gas chambers at all. There's a question was raised, and they say that it takes more gas to kill lice than it does to kill people. And they say that's why they were able to kill all these people with such a small amount of Zyklon B. But the truth of the matter is that when they're killing lice on the clothing, they leave the poison gas in with the lice for a day or more. We don't have that option when we're doing an execution. We only have 7 to 10 minutes. The person has to be dead in that. And the description.
Fred, we have to go to another break. We have to go to another quick commercial break, Fred. Hold that thought. You're doing a wonderful job, my man. Be right back, people. This is a spellbounding story. Be right back, folks.
We'll be right back. protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters.
I think this was a crime of opportunity. He did not know her at all, where he saw an individual, and bad things happened.
New information from University of Georgia Police Chief Jeff Clark about the suspect accused of killing a University of Georgia nursing student who was out for a jog near the campus in the town of Athens.
The investigation suggests that they had no relationship.
Records show the 26-year-old man, an illegal alien from Venezuela, who crossed into our country back in 2022. Chief Clark saying the man faces a long list of charges.
He has been charged with the following: malice murder, felony murder, aggravated battery, aggravated assault, false imprisonment, kidnapping, hindering a 911 call, and concealing the death of another.
This, by the way, the first murder on the UGA campus in 20 years. Classes canceled until Monday. In other news, polls are open in South Carolina. Voters casting ballots in the Republican primary. Former President Trump has been campaigning in the Palmetto State, along with former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. Trump making his appeal to black voters.
He got indicted a second time, and a third time, and a fourth time. And a lot of people said that that's why the black people like me, because they have been hurt so badly and discriminated against. And they actually viewed me as I'm being discriminated against. It's been pretty amazing.
As for Haley,
don't you think we need to have mental competency tests for anyone over the age of 75? Look, I'm not being disrespectful when I say that. We all know people over the age of 75 that can run circles around us.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Right now, you can eliminate odors, mold, mildew, bacteria, and viruses in your home with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm uses oxy technology that naturally sends out O3 molecules that seek out and destroy odors. The Thunderstorm doesn't mask or cover up bad smells, it eliminates them, leaving that fresh, clean smell, just like after a thunderstorm. The Thunderstorm is small, plugs right into the wall, and fits in the palm of your hand. Put one in your basement, bedroom, family room, kitchen, or anywhere you want clean, fresh air. It even includes a USB cord for your car or truck. Right now, save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-pack for whole home protection. That's three units for under $200, a fraction of the cost compared to other air purifiers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use discount code USA3 to save $200. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Use USA and the number 3. Shipping is free.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Dear Blood River Radio family, this is the most fascinating story. I'm so glad that Fred threw a little humor in there. They had to hide their samples in their dirty socks and dirty underwear. So we're going to go right back. We're going to go briefly right back to the death camps. And I was telling Fred, they took samples, listen, from the basement of particular death camps, from the ground level, from the attic, from the roof. Listen, not only that, they viewed old photographs made from the 1930s and 1940s, aerial photographs that were taken by the Luftwaffe, and I would assume the Germans, aerial photographs. And that might have to go to another show. But, Fred, we'll go back to the laboratory that did the testing. But first, I want the people to know just how far y'all went in doing this testing. They took control samples of soil from around the alleged death camps, from floor samples, ceiling samples, basement samples, control samples. They went to the beyond the last mile. And they found discrepancies. We might want to talk about that briefly. Fred, when y'all compare the old blueprints of the so-called, the alleged death facilities, the death camps, with compare those with aerial photographs taken during the 30s and the 40s. If memory serves from past shows with you, didn't y'all find discrepancies in what was supposed to be alleged death camps with what the facilities, the structures actually looked like prior to the end of the war? In other words, what I'm trying to say is some of these death camps were manufactured after the event supposed to have taken place.
Yes.
Briefly, if you will. Go ahead. Go ahead, Fred. Cover that briefly, if you will, sir.
What happened at Dachau? I went to, on a second trip, I went to Europe. I went to Dachau because that's where there is a so-called gas chamber there, but the gas chamber there was, they said, was never used. I looked at the facilities at Dachau. I looked at the facilities at Mauthausen, and I looked at the facilities at Hartheim Castle. And of course, Mauthausen and Hartheim Castle were just too small. They were closets. There were no place. There was no room to put anybody in these facilities, and they talked about them because people didn't know how big they were or anything else. And at Dachau, when I got there, we made measurements, and I verified the fact. I got up on top of the alleged gas chamber. They said the gas came in through vents like shower vents and shower heads, and these shower heads were just pieces of tin that were embedded in the ceiling. That looked like shower heads, but they really weren't. And at any rate, we made drawings of the facility, and at the end of the time when we got back, Ernst Zundel asked me if I wanted a copy of the congressional record because Eisenhower brought the entire Congress over to look at the gas chambers and see how bad they were. Well, when I got the numbers, none of the measurements matched. And you know, if there's anything that Congress does right, it gets data right. It makes measurements. It documents stuff. They do an excellent job. They may not do anything else right, but they certainly do a good job at documenting stuff. And I said to Zundel, I says, this can't be the same place. I said the dimensions are off by 2 and 3 feet. So he said, that's ringing a bell. And he had a newspaper article where two American soldiers said that they were sent to Dachau, and their job was to build a gas chamber for Eisenhower. They built the gas chamber. Eisenhower showed it to the Congress. Then when he sent the Congress home, they sent another crew in there, which tore down the gas chamber and built a permanent one with beautiful ceramic tile and everything else. So we found that the alleged gas chamber that was at Dachau wasn't the one that they showed Congress. So simply what it meant was Eisenhower had two gas chambers built there, a temporary one and a permanent one, so he could show Congress what the Germans didn't do. So as a result, that you can see how many lies were going on there. And you know, there was absolutely no need of that. But there's a big sign at Dachau that says, this is the gas chamber that they never used. So, but anyway, so as I say, I call that Eisenhower's gas chamber. So,
Fred, this is kind of an aside, but a lot of our listeners know that, you know, Eisenhower was Jewish. His mother was Jewish. A matter of fact, in his yearbook, from West Point, you probably know this. His nickname given him was the Swedish Jew. That was the nickname given to him, and his own record is hating Germans. This is kind of an aside, but in some of the letters, you can go to the Eisenhower Library, Museum, whatever. Some of the letters he wrote to Mamie Eisenhower, he said that the Germans were animals, that they were absolutely animals, and they needed they needed to be have very strict. I don't know if he talked about castration. But he absolutely hated them, and he had. And this is kind of aside, but it's German. It's German month. He built what they call known nowadays of the Eisenhower death camps, where he had millions of German soldiers that served honorably in the Luftwaffe. He had civilians put just in open air prisons. No structures, no shelter, no whatsoever, no bedding, no food, no water, and they died by the tens of thousands. That's how. So I am not surprised that sorry SOB would lie and try to do anything he could to make the good German people look bad. But anyway,
that was Rhineland Meadow. Yes, that was a disgrace, and it's a blot on the United States for allowing him to do that.
But yes, it is.
He shouldn't have been there in the first place. He was not our best general. He was there. We should have had MacArthur there. MacArthur was third in his class. I think he was. Eisenhower was something like 28th in his class or something. He was a very poor student. He was a very poor general. But I guess he fit better politically. But and look what they did to our other generals. Eisenhower was the top one, and he was the lowest in his class. So,
yes, he was promoted over many other officers that were superior to him. You know, he never, Eisenhower, I may be getting off, but I got to tell people this about Eisenhower. I may be getting off the script a little bit, but Eisenhower was never in a battle. He never fired a shot in anger. He was never in any, unlike General MacArthur, who was in battle after battle, unlike General Patton, who served in Mexico before the, you know, during Pershing's stint down at the Eisenhower. Patton was a second lieutenant. He was the pistol shot champion of the army, but all these other generals had served in combat. Not only was he Jewish, and not only had he never served in combat. I've read a book where he was having sexual relations with one of FDR's daughters, that's being Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But getting back, I'm getting us off track there. But just to remind people, this is German month, and there's no greater lie in the history of the world than the lie of the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust. It is the linchpin, to quote Monica Schaefer, the Holocaust lie is the linchpin lie that holds all these other lies together. That's why we're trying so hard to bring this man on who's an expert on gas chambers and executing humans by gas chambers. And and he's doing a wonderful job. And now we go back from...
I was going to say, now that we got through with the specific details that we were...
Yes.
That the camps, why don't we bring Mona back in?
Yes, and then bring Mona and take us to the Zundel trial, to the Ernst Zundel trial. So, yeah, bring Mona back in.
Yeah, the Zundel trial, it was attended by Lady Renouf, David Irvin, and Fred Kinsella.
Miss Mona, hold that thought. We have to go to our final break in this hour, but when we bring you back, you'll have plenty of time. I want you to tell all about the trial and David Irving and Lady Renouf. So we'll be right back to you, Miss Mona, after this last break. Hold on, people. We'll be right back.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood Group Radio family, thank you. We were in this last segment here. We'll have to bring Fred back, even though it won't be German month anymore. But people like to tell you this. Fred... Leuchter, he paid a very dear price for what he did. You know, he had his own engineering firm prior to this, before he got mixed up in this trial for Ernst Zundel. The Canadian government was persecuting Ernst Zundel. He probably didn't know just how much hatred from the government and from the Jewish community he was going to stir up. But even if he didn't know, even if he had no clue that was going to happen, the man has paid the price. He has to do what some people might call menial chores, you know, working like as a common American. When that's it was a long fall. He went from having his own engineering firm to having to drive an Uber cab and work at, I think Home Depot or whatever. And I'm not diminishing honest work. I just want you people to know the man made a hell of a sacrifice. You love him or hate him. He made a hell of a sacrifice. I'm going to tell you something else he did. He's done something to our people to help dispel this lie, to shine the bright light of day upon a stinking lie. And I'm going to tell you something else. If what these people want you to do, these Jews and these Jew-loving Southern Baptists, that type of people, they want you us to say, yes, our German ancestors, if you're of German ancestry, they want you to say, to admit that your family, your parents, your grandparents were bloodthirsty, satanic killers, that they murdered millions of innocent, poor innocent Jews that would not hurt pluck a hair from anybody's head. They wouldn't kill a fly. And these stinking, murdering Germans were so horrible. They killed 6 million of them. They want you to admit that. That's what they want you to do. They want you to admit a damn lie. And that's why they hate Fred so bad. Now, Fred wants us to go back to Mona. I was thinking Mona knew something about the trial in Canada. But I'll leave it to you, Mona. We could talk about the Earth Sunder trial. I'll tell you what, Fred, briefly for about 2-3 minutes, tell us about how the trial went in Canada, and then let Mona, I don't know how much she knows, tell us how the trial went briefly, just in a few minutes, and then we'll leave enough time for Mona, because we got about 8 minutes left.
Okay, well, the situation in Canada was such that the court refused to accept my report as a report, and they couldn't get rid of me because I was a qualified expert. So what they did is they asked me to testify, and I testified all of my report into the record, which was the worst thing they could do because they had all these news people sitting in the room taking notes. And they would have been better off just saying, we got this report, and not tell anybody what's in the report. But instead, they broadcast it out all over the place, and all these newspapers took it. And this was the first time that the gas chambers had ever been questioned. And they were questioned by academics before, but this is the first time that it had been publicly done. And it was a real mistake. Good, now you can bring it if you want.
That's my in the Fred the I don't remember the Arsundel's main lawyer, but they said he was brilliant. He just destroyed the prosecution's witnesses. If I'm correct on that, Fred, didn't he just make fools out of them? He proved them to be liars and charlatans.
Yes, you're talking about Doug Christie, and he did.
Yes, I mean, Doug Christie.
Yes, and they, you know, they had a witness to the Holocaust who was in one of the concentration camps. His name was Verba. And Verba stood up and he testified in court. They were trying to shut him up because he was making a mockery of everything. He said we could tell which days they were cremating people because German Jews burn green, Polish Jews burn, French Jews burn red, it was just the defense attorney was trying to shut him up. Finally, the judge shut him up, but he did the damage. They thought they had. Intelligently, and they didn't. But yes.
That's beyond ludicrous. I cannot believe. Man, he was probably the best witness the defense had. You know, because it made the prosecution look like the idiots that they were. Amazing. But so before we run out of time, Miss Mona, you've been hanging on very patiently. What would you like to talk about this, about the draft? If you want to, you know what? We could talk about David Irving, if you would like, because you seem to know about him. And David Irving is another person who's paid the price to dispel this Holocaust. Tell us about what you know about David Irving, Miss Mona, and how that meshes with the poking holes, with shining the light of day, the cleansing, purifying light of sun rays on the deadly, rotten lie of the Holocaust. Go ahead, Miss Mona.
Well, David Irving had already been a skeptic when he came to the trial of Ernst Zundel in Canada and met Fred Lucher at that time. And it was by meeting Fred and finding out his evidence that he became a full-fledged Holocaust denier. Fred can tell you more about his association with David, which occurred there in Canada, right, Fred?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I was with David at the trial. I was also with David at two other subsequent meetings in California, run by the IHR, Institute of Historical Review.
Right, and then Fred had the honor of being contacted by Lady Michelle Renew, who is presently in contact with David Irving, who most people realize he's quite ill right now. And we're hoping that, I'm hoping that Lady Renew can bring him back to life with his beauty and her love. I know she loves him, and we're all hoping for the best for David Irving right now.
Yes, we are. We most certainly are. That poor man, they tormented him to death. It's, you know what? I'm not trying to be too dramatic, but probably if I had to make an educated guess, I'd say one of the reasons that David Irving is such so ill is because they have probably hounded him so and brought so much stress. Stress is a killer. That's probably, I know, well, no, one thing for sure, it sure hadn't helped him at all. Well, where would you like to go from here, Miss Mona? Because you've hung on real for a long time patiently. So any other comments you would like to make about anything we've said?
I just want everyone to understand that Fred's relationship to the execution industry is totally as a humanitarian. His whole mission is to make executions fast and painless as much as possible. And every time he tries to make a move in this direction, he gets stopped by the Jews, who apparently have a different agenda. They actually like to see people tortured to them, as do most of the people who are in the execution industry. Recently, we had an execution of a man named Kenneth Smith, and Fred was on the phone to his lawyers and governors and everybody saying, you can't use nitrogen to kill this guy, because unless you're 20,000 feet in the air, he's going to get severe contractions and bends. Nobody listened to him. They strapped the guy recently, it was 2 weeks ago, I think, to the gurney. And yeah, sure enough, he had contractions and bends and died horrible death. And those stupid people, those executioners, are all congratulating themselves about what a beautiful job they did. So I just want everyone to understand the mission here. Fred's mission here as an expert in executions is to make them humane and fast and safe. He's not a killer. He's not a monster. He's the most beautiful man you'll ever hope to meet.
Another particular case before we run out of time. Fred, before we run out of time, briefly tell the people about, I believe it was in Florida, where the Florida officials executed a man. They did not follow your advice. And tell them what happened to the man's hair, Fred.
More than his hair. You're talking about Jesse DeFaro. They set Jesse DeFaro's head on fire. And it was because they had defective electrodes. The electrodes melted. They were soldered. They shouldn't have been. They melted, and they generated so much heat that the voltage dropped. And I believe they even boiled the man's blood, because the voltage dropped to something down around 30 or 40 volts. And it went slowly up to 500 volts. It was a terrible thing that they did, and they blamed it on the fact that they said they had the wrong sponge. They had an artificial sponge, and they should have a natural sponge. That's why, in the movie The Green Mile, they had that. They did the same thing with the scenario about the same thing, and of course, it's ridiculous. Stephen King did very poor research on that, because that's not what happened. What happened is that the voltage was too low on their electric chair to start with, and when they threw in a high resistance electrode, it melted.
Fred, Mona, we've run completely out of time. It's been great having you on. It's been great having you on. Thank you, people, so much for coming on. Fred, I'll be getting in touch with you again, and you too, Mona. So thank you very much for coming on. Dear Blood River Radio family, I sure hope you enjoyed this broadcast. It's an eye-opener. Anyway, hang on. We're transitioning third hour. We're going to bring on Gene, the Bitter Ender Andrews.